Train was apparently the quickest way back. We had piled into the empty carriage. There was no one on it, courtesy of Rome, who tossed them out without an ounce of remorse. As it started to move, I remained glued to Sirrett's side. I might have been numb, but my brain still knew it was bad. Really bad. He was no longer conscious, despite my constant yelling at him to wake up. There wasn't even a flutter of his eyelashes. No glimpse of beautiful, mischievous eyes. The tears just wouldn't stop flowing. I had been batting them away, but that got tiring, so I just let them fall, soaking his already blood-soaked clothing. I can't take this any longer. Cohen's mutters had my head lifting up from Sirrett's chest. The massive soul was up front, where he'd been standing guard. He strode down the aisle, and with hands far more gentle than I was used to from him, lifted me from his brother and hugged his big body right around me.
It's going to be okay, baby dweller. Sirrett is tougher than you think, and this isn't his first knife in the chest.
I pulled myself as hard as I could into him, burying my head into his warmth. His words got a little strangled then.
Please, for the love of my sanity and the safety of the train's walls, stop crying.
Stop getting stabbed, I shot back, a flicker of emotion surging through me again. Cohen held me like that for the rest of the journey. I only lifted my head to check on Sirrett, but otherwise, I remained in his comforting embrace. Finally, the train crossed the water and pulled into the station atop the massive mountain. Rome carried Sirrett, moving with ease, and I was set on my feet to walk between Cohen and Eris. The golden soul brushed his hands across my face, and as he pulled them away, I realized that not only were my cheeks covered in tears, but they were also streaked with Sirrett's blood.
There was no time for me to fall apart again, though. It was just a little blood. Or a lot of blood, which was leaking out of one of my ab curses.
They were so mine. No point in denying it any longer. I was thankful that Eris kept a tight hand on my shirt, because his grip stopped me from plummeting down at least 8 times. Once we hit flat ground, Rome took off at a run. And that was when Yale's persuasion wore off completely. Those assholes! How dare they mute my fear and pain? How dare they lessen my worry about Sirrett? It was serious. It had to be. Rome would never run like this unless it was serious. I took off too, as fast as my clumsy legs could move. Running was not my thing. I'd said that more than once, but right then, I was a freaking athlete. Ignoring the burn, I was actually keeping pace with the brothers. Probably they were keeping pace with me, but it was much better for my sanity to think the pace was theirs. We circled around the outer areas of Blesswood. It was later in the sun cycle now. The sun was lowering itself to make way for night. When we reached the dingy back entrance to Topia, Eris reached out and threaded our fingers together. I glanced down, my eyes widening slightly. He caught my look.
You have to touch one of us, remember?
Oh, right. Of course, this was nothing more than necessity. They had a pact. I couldn't forget that. A pact to keep our pack together. We crossed over with ease, and then we were back in the land of pretty and weird. Rome, who had gone through first, was waiting for us. Sirrett was still in his arms, and I rushed across so that I could make sure he was still alive. I placed my fingers on his face, sliding them along his cheeks and down to his throat to feel for a pulse. His skin was hot, almost burning, but there was a sturdy beat in his throat.
He's feverish, I said, lifting my head to the others. Why did you bring him here? Who will help him in Topia? We should have gone to Blesswood Healers.
Rome shifted his brother higher in his arms, before shaking his head.
Trickery is going to need a little more help than a soul healer.
Then he tilted his head back and roared into the sky above.
Abel!
I didn't understand. What was more than a soul healer, and who the hell was Abel? The name sounded familiar. Wait, wasn't Abel the god I had stolen from? Just as I thought it, purple robes burst into view as a god stepped out of thin air. Nifty trick, that one. I ducked my head down and tried not to stare at him.
Rome?
I whispered.
That's the god I stole the cup from.
Is it a good idea to call him down here? His mouth twitched before he strode around and walked straight up to the massive god. Abel, or D.O.D., had a face like beauty and perfection smashed together, and then some shiny sprinkled on top of it. I hadn't paid much attention last time,
All I had seen was purple robes and the cup. But now, I could see him so clearly. His hair was fiery red, but with a darkness to it, almost like a ruby had been spun out and made into hair. His eyes were green, though it wasn't the usual green. His were whatever color green would have been if it had been touched by magic. His skin was bronze, dark enough to be thought of as copper in the right lights. I was distracted from my god-gawking by Rome's words.
"Hit by a blade forged in Crow's workshop."
Abel's beautiful face darkened then, and actual clouds washed across the previously perfectly clear sky.
"How is a blade from death on Manatzel? Raun is damned chaos."
Those words came from Sirit, and my heart leapt for joy as I dashed closer. He was awake! I had forgotten that a scary-ass god was standing there, and I pretty much barreled him over trying to get to Sirit. Before Abel could react, though, Cohen and Yael were stepping in front of me. I pushed at their backs. "Let me through! I need to see him!" Abel's low, eerily powerful voice washed through me.
"Yes, let her through. I'm very curious to meet the dweller my sons guard so diligently."
The world around me went a little pear-shaped, and it took my brain a few moments to register what he had just said. Sons? Had I misheard him? How could the Abkurses be his sons? The gods have no children. The originals were created by the Staviti guy, and then the others were born as souls with enough power to be accepted in Topia. Right? Right? Where the hell was Emmy when I needed a history lesson?
"Ignore Willa. She isn't your concern."
Rome's voice was a bite of command. I'd never heard him so angry before. I heard a thump then, and I tried to wedge my head through a small gap to see what was going on. The thump had been Sirit. He was back on his feet, although he looked very pale, as he fought to remain upright. Abel forgot about me then, reaching out and placing a hand on Sirit's chest. At first I thought he was just touching him, but then I realized there was something in his hand, a jar or a small glass object. It shattered as it came into contact with Sirit, and something misty emerged. The huge gash, which was still visible across Sirit's chest, slowly closed, and my knees almost buckled when he let out a relieved sigh.
"I'm going to kill Rao,"
he said to Abel as he straightened, finally looking like the soul, godspawn or whatever he actually was, that he usually did.
"You let him know that if he ever tries to send his chaos down again, we will end him. If he messes with our dweller again, I will make sure his ending is long and drawn out."
Abel's expression grew even more serious. He looked between the five of them.
"I will deliver the message, but you five need to get out of Topia. You know the rules. Your punishment is for one life cycle, no less. I will forgive this infraction, and not extend your time."
His eyes flicked across to me then, where I was still wedged between two of his sons.
"I have a feeling I'll be seeing you soon, Dweller."
His promise rang across the land, and then he was gone. I couldn't even bring myself to care right then. I was more interested in getting to Sirit so that I could double-check he was okay. No one stopped me as I flung myself at the Abkurse, who now looked like he was in perfect health. He lifted me up and against his body, holding me tightly.
"You didn't need to worry, Rox. It takes more than a blade to bring me down."
I pulled back, my eyes narrowing on him. Apparently. My angry eyes flicked between the other four as well. "I think you souls have a little explaining to do." The explaining didn't happen until we left Topia, which was much faster and easier through the dingy entrance than the banishment cave, and we were back in Sirit's room at Blesswood. Before anyone could change out of their bloody clothes or even sit down, I had my hands on my hips as I stood at the center of them all.
"Start talking."
My voice was a snap of command. I actually didn't expect them to say anything since they never obeyed any of my other commands, but surprisingly enough, Sirit spoke.
"What Abel said is true. He is our father, and Adeline is our mother. Both gods of Topia."
"So, you're actually gods? Like, real gods? 100%? Special cupcake god gods?" Eris snorted.
"Yes."
"What the hell are you doing on Manatzel, then?" None of this made sense. My head was spinning as I tried to wrap my tiny mind around the fact that my soul was merged with the souls of five gods. "You guys have seen my ass! This was bad. So, so, so freaking bad. Sirit smirked.
Your ass has almost been the best part of this entire series of events.
Packed,
Rome grunted, nudging Sirit's shoulder. The gesture was almost gentle. I guess he felt bad about Sirit getting stabbed. Fatigue from the fight and stress washed over me, and I basically collapsed onto the floor. I needed to sit. I still don't understand, I said. Explain everything to me.
There's only so much we can tell you without you becoming an even larger target for the original gods, Cohen said. You've already made yourself known to Ra'u and Abel. That's bad enough.
I was about to start losing it, Willa-style, when Eris at least gave me a little more information.
All you need to know for now is that we are gods, that we are stuck on Manatsal for the rest of this life cycle, and that Manatsal weakens us, which is why we had to get Sirit to Topia.
Somehow, I was on my feet, and then somehow I was out the front door. I couldn't even remember moving, but running was happening, and then the chest shredding was happening, and I found myself collapsing near the supply closet that had once been my temporary sanctuary. Crawling inside, I curled up in a ball and tried to assess everything I now knew. The Abcurses were gods. Their parents were Abel and Adeline. Abel was scary beautiful, and scary deadly, and I was pretty sure that Emmy had called him a god of trickery. Ra'u had hit me with some sort of curse, and he was creepily acting as though I was special, somehow, because I survived it. It was almost as though he had a particular kind of interest in me now, as though he saw me as useful. A heavy thud against the door made me jump.
Get out here, soldier, Sirit commanded. Don't make me crawl into a supply cupboard. That shit is for dwellers.
I am a dweller, I yelled back. I don't belong out there with you guys. The door slammed open, and a long arm reached in and hauled me out. I found myself being held up off the floor, evil green cat-like eyes boring into me.
You've never been a dweller, Willa, and if you couldn't play with the gods, Ra'u's curse would have killed you.
Oh, for fuck. Do you assholes have to be right all the time? And stop listening to my thoughts. The other four were down the hall a little, waiting for me to get my shit together. Sirit set me back on my feet, and I held both hands up in front of me. Sorry about that minor panic attack. I'm okay now. And funnily enough, the moment I said it, I knew it was true. I was okay. I was more than okay, actually. I must have been having some kind of delayed reaction to everything that had happened. Maybe it was Yale's fault for repressing my emotions. Either way, the freakout seemed to be over, and I could feel a calm beginning to settle into my bones. Elowyn was dead, Ra'u had fled, and Sirit was alive. In the greater scheme of things, everything really was okay. So what's the plan? I asked, looking between the perfect, arrogant faces of the five males who had rapidly become the center of my world. Sirit tucked me in under his massive arm, and we walked toward his brothers.
Class is tomorrow. Hope you're prepared, because you're going to learn everything the souls get to learn.
I groaned. Learning. That was the worst plan ever. Rome laughed.
We'll keep you safe, Willa, even if Ra'u comes for you again. He won't get through us.
And what about when they leave? When their exile is ended?
You'll be coming with us,
Sirit whispered, close to my temple. Why are you guys being punished anyway? I asked, thinking about all the things they could have done wrong to make the gods angry enough to banish them from Topia.
Trickery thought it would be a good idea to...
Yale started, but Sirit cut him off.
We don't need to talk about it right now.
I nudged Sirit's side, the motion gentle because I didn't know if there were any lingering effects of his injury still bothering him or not.
What did you do?
Sirit sighed, his arm falling from my shoulders, and he muttered something incoherent. Rome laughed.
We can't hear you, trickery.
I tricked Stavidi into trying to mate with one of Bestiary's creations, okay?
I stopped walking, my mouth falling open, my words tumbling out on a squeal.
You what?
Sirit crossed his hands up in the air.
You wouldn't understand. It's a running joke between the gods. Stavidi has been in love with Pika, the goddess of love since the beginning of time. She was the first companion that he created, but she didn't love him. She eventually fell in love with Ra'u, and so Stavidi banned all of the gods from pairing up or having children together.
He thought that it would be better for nobody to have a partner than for Pika and Rau to be together. Anyway, so, to get around his rules, D.O.D., our dear old dad, used his magic to disguise our mother as Pika. She ran to Stavidi and asked him to gift her with children. It's the only way to have children in Topia, since Stavidi controls everything. So, she told him that she would finally love him if he allowed her children. He agreed, and gifted her 2 pregnancies, on the condition that she not seek out Rau to be the father of her children. He obviously thought that if he took Rau off the table, she would turn to him instead. My brain seemed to be short-circuiting. This was all a little hard to swallow. So he thought Adeline was Pika, and he allowed her 2 pregnancies?
That's right.
Yale was the one who answered this time. There was a wry smile twisting his lips.
By the time he found out that he had been tricked, it was too late. And being the asshole that our father is, he manipulated the magic to get as many sons out of those 2 pregnancies as possible.
That's really messed up. Impressive? Sirit snorted.
Over the life cycles, you'd be surprised by how many times Stavidi has fallen for the Pika illusion. It's like he's deluded, and every time it happens, he convinces himself that it really is her. That's how desperately he loves her.
So you disguised a beast of some kind as Pika, I surmised, trying to keep my tone bland. He grunted, and I took that as affirmative. The other boys were smirking. They clearly still found it amusing. But wait, I frowned, looking from one of them to the other. If Seward is the one being punished, then why are you all down here? We had herded back into Seward's room since it was the closest, and Cohen grabbed me by the shoulders, spinning me around.
We stick together, he said firmly.
It was almost a warning, or an ultimatum. The others were staring at me, but trying to be covert about it, like they were waiting to hear my response or to see my reaction. A tiny smile hooked on the side of my mouth, and I bit down into my lip, trying to curb it. Okay, I said casually. We stick together then. Cohen smiled, a real smile, wide and beautiful and completely disarming, almost knocking me off my feet as an answering happiness welled inside me, filling me to bursting with emotion. For the first time in my life, as I stood surrounded by the ab curses, I wasn't worried about what the next Sun Cycle would bring. Whatever the world of the gods threw at us, we would face it together, and nothing would defeat us. To be continued.
This has been Trickery, Curse of the Gods, Book 1. Written by Jamin Eve and Jane Washington. Narrated by Vanessa Moyen. Copyright 2017 by Jamin Eve and Jane Washington. Production copyright 2017 by Jamin Eve and Jane Washington.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.